both had haircuts today.
We did.
Freshly sheared.
Unintentionally synchronized.
I thought you weren't yesterday, were you?
No.
No, you're today. No. Yeah.
But it's nice to know that. Well, do you want someone to know that you've had a haircut when you've had a haircut?
Well, I don't mind. I let mine go quite long. My hair grows quickly and thick. So if I've not had a haircut, my head size seems to increase by about 20 to 30%. Yeah. And then when I get a haircut, I look smaller.
I mean, you don't, because you're 6'5", 6'6".
No,
foot six.
Like, not smaller in height. I mean, like, in profile. I just have, like, a smaller frame.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, like, because my hair is thick and it grows outwards. It doesn't grow down, it goes out.
Because
I would have to grow out for a while before it grows down.
Because I was talking to my hairdresser person today, and they were saying there are some people that come in and have their haircut every 3 weeks. And I'm like, those are clearly people who don't want their hair to have they don't want their hair to be noticeably changed.
No, they want it. This is the length it needs to be. Yeah,
but I always have my haircut to, you know, have an arc, have a journey.
I'm happy grow out a bit.
Yeah, out. Explore the opportunities and potential of your haircut. You know, let it change with the seasons and the weeks.
And then you plan your calendar around the haircut.
That's right.
And you go, okay, well, I have that coming up.
Oh, well, so you say that. Hang on a second. But when you and I have confirmed dates before, and I've said, I can't do that on that date in 5 weeks' time because I have a haircut. And you were like, who plans their haircut?
I still stand by this. I've never planned a haircut 5 weeks in advance.
If you book it,
that is insane.
What, but it's not insane. It
is
makes complete
five
sense.
Weeks in advance.
Well,
I booked my haircut no more than a week in advance.
Yeah, but
no more.
Here's where you do it. First of all, that's when you have your haircut anyway, 5 to 6 weeks, right? You look at your diary, check availability. Great, haircut's in. And that way, it's locked in. Yes, you could wait.
Yeah, but I
weeks
don't know
before.
What my week looks like in 5 to 6
well,
weeks.
Well, you will do if you put your haircut in, because you'll up to it and people can say, oh, can you do this thing? You go, I can't, I've got a haircut. Or don't worry, I'll cancel the haircut. But you know what you don't want, which I've had, which is...
Can't get one.
Can't get a haircut. And you have to wait 2-3 weeks. You're like, shit, but I need one now. You know when you like make the decision, you're like, okay, my hair needs a haircut now.
I think your barber's more busy than mine is. I can book mine, not always, but I can book mine for the next day.
I just like to be organised with these things. I just don't like to panic about it.
And it's always about 5-6 weeks? Is it like a diary thing?
No, but I think it depends on the cut, depends on the person doing it and the season, and I think, and what I've got on. But I think 5 to 7 weeks.
In the earlier episodes, you let it go longer.
That's because it's still post-COVID.
Yeah.
Post-COVID, I used to go for longer, floppier, more
You're depressed.
And then I think the thing is, the longer the hair, the more maintenance it takes, and the more, you know, a strong gust in your whole barnets, you know,
compromised.
Off the rack. Yeah. So off the rack, you know what I mean? Off kilter.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's our hair. James, it is the Cannes Film Festival currently, although by the time this episode comes out, which will be a week from now, it might have finished and concluded. And people may indeed know who the Palme d'Or winner is.
We should go next year.
Sure. Yeah, I will. I mean, I'd love to go. But if you can't book your haircut 5 weeks in advance, how are you going to get me to think about going to Cannes next year?
I have a friend who's there and she's like, you should have come. And I'm like, organisation.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so just a couple of things I thought were relevant to this show. There's some film news that I thought that is kind of like made for this podcast, this news. And that is, so Zach Cregger is the filmmaker who made Barbarian last year. Comic actor, comedian, turned film director, horror film director from last year.
Nice. Those footprints all over the film.
A film we both really enjoyed, right?
Yes. Surprise film we both really enjoyed too.
Exactly. He's written his follow-up film called Weapons. And I remember that a couple of months ago, there was an intense bidding war for that script. People were bidding left, right, center. It was the hottest script in town because Barbarian had done so well. And then following that, going into Cannes, we've got some news about casting. Now, the first piece of casting is the hottest man of 2023, Pedro Pascal.
Is he in?
He's in. Wow. Pedro Pascal is going
to
be cast.
It's a hot cast to get involved.
And his co-star is going to be Renata Reinsvay from The Worst Person in the World.
I fell in love with her, yeah.
So I think between that, those are like Pulp Kitchen darlings there. Barbarian, Pedro Pascal, Renata Reinsvay.
Hello. Signed up. Yeah,
and Weapons, if you're wondering, what is Weapons? Is it going to be another horror film? Is it going to be what this? Weapons is described, according to The Hollywood Reporter, as an interrelated, multi-story horror epic that tonally is in the vein of Magnolia, the 1999 film from Paul Thomas Anderson. When someone says Weapons is an interrelated, multi-story horror epic, I think that could be amazing, or that's going to completely sink your career before it's even started.
Yeah.
Floppity flop flop, like Under the Silver Lake.
It's really hard because, like, films on paper you write the concept of some of the best films of all time on paper. You're like, what? But then, like, you know, it's all about execution.
All about execution. So, but I look forward. I'd
love like a big Pulp Kitchen approved stamp graphic when we like see something like, yes, this is, we condone this.
I look forward to this.
Go past our desk. We go, oh yes, chuchung.
Can we pre-order tickets to this now, please?
I've seen on social media there's a lot of because obviously Killers of the Flower Moon, so hot. Did you see the trailer for Killers of the Flower Moon that I sent you?
Did you send it to me?
I did send it to you.
I was probably
I think
busy.
You were busy. It looks good.
Yes,
it looks really good. And there's been a lot of positive early impressions because I assume people are watching it now.
I think, yeah. I mean, you look at Scorsese on the carpet and I'm like, he's getting old now. He's not frail or anything, but I'm like, this guy isn't going to be around forever. Mm. And I think anytime he brings out a film, it's always something of interest. It's something very interesting. And it's a 3.5 hour.
Is it three?
Three and a half hours. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
That's another Irishman. And that's another whole. It's like, Marty, could this have been a series maybe? But okay, I'll entrust
you. I see lots of like shots of
Oppenheimer's 3 hours.
DiCaprio and De Niro in black tie with black Ray-Ban Wayfarers just looking.
Oh, in Cannes.
Just looking so cool. Just chatting very casually.
Hungover as hell.
Yeah, like, you know, Leo's on some yacht somewhere. just
doing the Wolf of Wall Street thing.
The Wolf of Wall Street thing, throwing 20s at Carl Chandler, telling him to F off. But yeah, I am excited for that. It 3.5 hours.
I know.
And, you know, Scorsese is a big fan of Ari Aster. Has released a very long film, which I'm talking about later, Birds of Prey. But he's very much endorsed him as one of the great voices of modern cinema.
Okay, I know he's a big fan of Tar too. Interesting. Do you know that he said recently that I saw something that Martin Scorsese was like, the older he's like starting to realise, even now, just the full potential of cinema, but it's taken him a lifetime. And it's
only
like,
just...
Oh, wait, that's it.
There's like, something about these movies,
but that's
they're
going
to be big. What do you mean by that? He realised the potential.
He was saying that looking back, he's like, you know, he spent 5 decades working in film, working in cinema, making movies, maybe 6 decades. And even now, after all that time, he's still only discovering some of the true potential of cinema. He's only still seeing just over the horizon.
Never stop learning.
Be done. Yeah. Exactly. The other one I just wanted to, other bit of Cannes news I wanted to flag up is that Jonathan Glazer has made a new film. Now, Jonathan Glazer makes like one film every 10 years. He made Sexy Beast, which I really, really like.
Oh, I remember.
With Ray Winston. Great, tight 90-minute film. And he made Under the Skin. Did you ever see Under the Skin with Michelle Williams? No. Scarlett Johansson?
No.
Oh, that's a really interesting piece of work. That is like, I think at the time people were like, oh my God, Scarlett Johansson's so hot with sci-fi. Yeah. And she just done Lucy. What's this film? It is a very bleak, minimal story with barely any dialogue in which Scarlett Johansson plays a alien who prowls the streets of Glasgow in a white van looking to pick up
again on men. Paper.
Yeah. looking to pick up men who she does pick up and then does nasty stuff with. It's based on a book by a guy called Michelle Faber, and it's really atmospheric and really cryptic. And it will take you a couple of watches, but it's really like visually striking, really something. If anyone watches Stranger Things, and that whole thing in Stranger Things where they go into the upside down and it's like that, or it's not the upside down, it's Eleven's mind and it's all black with the water on the ground. Yeah, that was done in Under the Skin. Now, I don't know if the Duffer brothers have consciously said that's a lift from there, but I like straight away I was like, oh, that's done in Under the Skin. It's a really, really interesting film. Anyway, and then anybody that does make... He doesn't make films very often.
Similar to when like Thanos gets the Soul Stone, you wake up in a pool of like,
yes, that's more of an orgy.
Water.
That's more of a spa vibe, that one. This one's more bleak.
Tearing of the one you've sacrificed.
So Jonathan Glazer's new film is called The Zone of Interest, which is loosely adapted from a Martin Amis novel. Martin Amis, who passed away a couple of days ago. Yep. It's a, as the Hollywood Reporter describes it, a bone-chilling Holocaust drama like no other. And I've seen articles say this depicts the Holocaust in a completely different way, similar to how people talked about Son of Saul.
Yeah.
I'm really intrigued by this and I really would like to watch it because a Jonathan Glazer film is so rare and always just hearing this kind of early buzz gets me excited. Who knows when that'll be released for us? That could be soon. It could be months down the road.
Sometimes
it could be
things are so...
It could be an Oscar contender or this time next year, we could have completely forgotten about it. But some things to keep an eye on. Also, initial reviews are out for Indiana Jones and they're kind of
a little bit mixed. I've seen some like, it is what it is. And I've seen some people saying it really should just be taken around the back and shot.
Pillow over the face. That was some updates from the Cannes Film Festival.
I like that little bit of Cannes correspondence, a little bit of stay tuned to Pop Kitchen for your little drip of film news. We do our best.
Yes, can do. But we have some present films to talk about, which we will talk about in a minute.
Stay tuned.
I was going to say Ari Aster has a new film out.
Oh, it's Ari.
Ari Aster.
Ari.
Not Ari.
Like the, Ari.
Not Ari, like the camera.
Well, I think it's also Ari Alexa.
I think also, who's Ari Alexa?
Ari Alexa is the camera.
Oh.
Oh, it's called the Ari Alexa. Alexa is someone. Alexa is some beautiful person.
Ari.
But then, so Ari Aster is A-R-I, whereas Ari Alexa is double R. So.
Okay, anyway.
In marketing for this film, which is called Birds Afraid, I've noticed that, you know, sometimes we see marketing films and it's directed by, insert, a film by, sometimes. This film has been put from the mind of Ari Aster.
One of those.
It's a film that's from the mind. It's
visionary.
From we got Ari Aster and we said, Ari, from your mind, give us, please.
I'm sensing that's what they also give for. That's when Nolan makes a film. It's when Charlie Kaufman makes a film. It's
a film, but from the mind. These people think like concepts we've never unpacked.
Also,
from the mind.
It tells you. He made these other films, but it's not like those other films.
Yes. And, you know, Hereditary and Midsommar.
And John Peele,
Complicated and brilliant in their own ways, but really felt like, whoa, this is new. This is interesting. And I feel like you and I have, coming into this film, you and I have, I've seen it, you haven't.
Yeah.
Have had almost like a sort of trepidatious enthusiasm with it. Mm-hmm. Like, we think Ari Aster's a really interesting voice in cinema, yet there are... His films, you never forget them. You never come out of them. Sorry, I haven't seen all his films. I've seen Midsommar and Hereditary. And we've both come out of them with sort of mixed feelings, ever so slightly disturbed, a little bit horrified. Yeah. Is that fair to say from both of us?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think about Hereditary much more than I think about Midsommar. That film really hasn't stayed with me that much, I think. But yeah, Hereditary, like, wow, really, for good and bad reasons, just very uncomfortable and imprinted on the mind. Midsommar kind of was getting there for me, and then I just found it really silly, and then it just kind of peeled away. But I know some people, obviously, have really sunk their teeth into that film.
But definitely looking forward to seeing what this person would do next, I'd say.
Yeah.
And what I've heard about this film, I've listened to a couple of interviews post seeing it about 3-4 days ago, and Ari Aster said that this is a film for him. This is a film for me. I've made it for myself. He's called it an elaborate Jewish joke. Right. And it's very much, I think, a thing which is very common with filmmakers who are starting to gain a lot of traction. We've seen this before where a lot of filmmakers will originally come out onto the fray and just be granted permission to make a film.
Yeah.
And they're so happy to have been given permission to make a film. Might not necessarily be the film they've always wanted to make. And they go on and prove themselves critically and commercially, make another film that then escalates. I'm not saying this happens in threes, but it tends to happen. We've seen this with like Christopher Nolan has been very public in saying, I would never have been able to make Inception without the success of The Dark Knight and The Prestige. And like even Damien Chazelle recently with Babylon, much a film for him coming from the success of his last ones. You would never have really got the chance to make a film with that budget and that scale for that long.
And I was also thinking of even Nope to an extent. It's kind of like, what? It's going to be like the other ones, but not like the other ones.
Directors like prove themselves with something that, someone said these films aren't for them, but they then go, right, now I can, let me make this for me.
Although I must say that always makes me makes me feel quite bit uncomfortable when a director says, this is a film for me, because I think, well, that's great, but
we're
an audience here. Okay, don't forget about us.
I'm going to get on to sort of this idea of a film for our Ari Aster and how that makes me feel about this film. I'll get on to that later, because like something coming from the voice of someone and the subject matter this film deals with is, you know, I'm going to get on to it. But this is a really difficult film to categorize and define when you see it. It constantly evolves. It constantly changes. It's 3 hours long.
Right.
And it is an epic, psychotic, nightmarish comedy odyssey of personal discovery and a little bit of... It's kind of like a latent coming-of-age film as well. And in its three-hour runtime, I said it's a comedy, it tells this elaborate joke that in so many ways is very fascinating, but also completely exhausting.
Right.
It has what I think was a five-act structure with an epilogue, right?
Yeah.
And I think over the course of its runtime, I found it really difficult at times because it morphs into many different things, both in its structure and its form. And I think it's really irregular. And I think if you went in to watch this film and you tried to watch it and take everything literally that you saw on screen in front of you, I think, and you tried to figure it out as you watched it, you would become very wearied and really exhausted if you tried to do that. And I do think Ari knows that. And I think from the get-go, the film was quite good at communicating to you that what you're seeing from the get-go is not to be taken literally.
Okay.
And a lot of films that typically deal with this very high arch, fanciful nightmare logic, often they start quite grounded and then they eventually unravel. This film's different. Yeah. It starts this way. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, could you describe, but if you can, there's like, who's in it? What's the plot?
I'm coming.
If you can even try.
So, I'm glad that I've had a few days. I would not like to have seen it this morning.
Right.
And then be asked to talk about it. I think if you'd asked me coming out of the screening, James, what do you think of the film? It'd be like asking me to do my taxes after I've had a nap. Which would be like, I can't. But what this film is, it opens in an urban dystopia of violence and noise. And the film is very much an elongated psychotic panic attack, an anxiety attack. And we have at the center of this film a character called Bo, played by Joaquin Phoenix. And I think it portrays anxiety in a very interesting way. Instead of saying this is a character that has anxiety, instead, I think, tries to say the world is anxiety.
Yeah.
And this character called Bo is stuck in the very middle of it. Yeah. Bo is a middle-aged man who very much is like a little boy that's stuck in a middle-aged man's body. Mm-hmm. He's both sort of lumbering and pathetic and slightly overweight, but he's also sort of very small with drooped shoulders and very pathetic. And the world he lives in, like, it opens with him coming out of a therapy session, walking through the streets, and there's kids buying guns and candy floss and people that are naked stabbing each other to death. Wow. There's both revolution and sex everything is sort of overstimulating and awful and shocking.
Yeah,
and
TikTok.
You have to literally, literally sprint to the edge of your door because someone is literally about to stab you to death. Like I said, it's not like we said this person has anxiety. Like everything around him,
let's make you feel
anxious, is anxiety, and that's where we find ourselves. And he has a sort of slightly overbearing mother, and he's meant to get on a flight to go and visit her, and he realizes that because of some ridiculous comedy of errors that has to do with a key trying to get into his flat, he turns around and the key is gone, and he misses his flight. He can't get there. Everything is just hectic and anxious. Yeah. He misses his flight. And he ends up leaving his flat for the first time and embarking on this massive discovery odyssey where he has to go outside into the world. And we find him wandering through some parents that take care of people who have been injured. He ends up in the woods with a traveling theater company that sort of the lines between performance and audience is blurred. And then through to his mother's house. And this sort of takes place over 3 hours. And what I really did find watching it is that I really ebbed and flowed watching it about how going from, I think this is fantastic and smart and sharp, to that didn't work,
you
lost me, and I'm very, very wearied. It's really, really funny. For when it is funny. Okay. The opening sequence, which is it kind of plays out like a short film. The opening sequence, I'd say, is about 45 to 50 minutes, right? It's a long film.
Wow.
The opening sequence, 45, 50 minutes. And it is so wickedly funny and smart. Yeah. It has this kind of comedy delivery style that's all integrated into its design and its aesthetic.
Yeah.
And there are jokes which are blink and you miss it. Little flashes on screen, little moments, little notes left on the door, little like things that he decides to eat, things that happen, and it culminates to this amazing finale at like about 50 minutes, where everyone in my screening was absolutely howling with laughter.
Right,
and I was like, God, this is just fantastic. And the tone, like, it switches, as I said, this film morphs, and then that basically drops off a cliff. And I think it does that for a reason. I think there's a reason why most of the great stand-up comedy specials are
never really over an hour.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's something to do with like probably your endorphin dopamine gas tank gets depleted. And you probably couldn't laugh, even if it's that funny. And the film really sort of, it still has jokes, but the pacing really sort of changes. And it goes off and does something completely different. And what it does, I think, is interesting in a completely different way. But I spent a lot of my time in the sort of following acts of the film, wishing I could go back to that earlier bit. I never thought that the film was as slick or as smooth or as funny as what it managed to do in the beginning.
Yeah.
We have these really elongated stop motion sequences that are beautifully animated. And these moments I found very confusing to watch at the time, but sort of an hour and a half later into the film, I'm thinking back to them going, God, that is really clever. Okay. But the process of watching this film, because it is so regular, is really confusing and really disorienting. I said this again, you really can't try and watch this film and try to articulate or understand it as it's happening. It has to wash over you like a nightmare, has to wash over you like a dream. And you know what I said about sort of comedy and running out of steam and how you're sort of over 3 hours like how you are naturally going to ebb and flow. Your mood, your energy, your hunger, your need to go to the toilet is going to change within 3 hours. And we get to this, you know, final half an hour of the film, and the film is sort of very much rested on the humor side of it. We've had sort of elongated dialogue scenes, huge revelations, and it leads to this moment where we enter a room and there's this big joke that comes in. At this point, I'm 2 hours and 45 minutes with your film, and it really just fell flat for me. I didn't laugh, and I massively rolled my eyes. And this is the thing. The film attempts to do so many things, so many things, and I can't help but just think, oh, if you had just tried to do two fewer things, I think I really could have been there for that joke. And unfortunately, I wasn't, and I was getting very tired of your film by that point. And I really was like, okay, now we're doing act five, you're going into an epilogue. And one of the things that you'll find about this is that Freud's fingerprints are very heavy over this film, to the point where it starts to feel really icky. We've got a lot of ideas of guilt, overbearing mothers and sons, feeling slightly overburdened, slightly repressed, like something withheld sexually. And you just, after this long, so much of it starts to feel icky. I don't know if Ari Aster needs to give his mum a hug or never see her ever again. And look, it's not, I said this before, like Ari Aster, it's not a film about Ari Aster, but this is a film that he's written and directed. And when you see it, there's no way that those ideas and those themes aren't coming from something personal.
Yeah.
And I'm watching it and it feels like someone has really overshared. And in the moment, you're just seeing, it's indescribable on a podcast like this, but we're not going to be able to get it. Like, I'm talking Ari Aster territory. If you've seen an Ari Aster film, you know kind of thing I'm dealing with. Really out there ideas that I just go, God, I really didn't need to know that that was a thought process going on in your mind.
It's like overshare.
Overshare. What I will say is that I think there's a really cool explored idea, which I didn't have this while watching it, but in the days since, I've thought about what it means about inherited guilt from generations, what it means to have generations from your family. And I think this is a whole idea about sort of inherited anxiety from people of the Jewish faith and like attending funerals and who what it means when someone is gone through stress and how that manifests and how they raise someone. And there's sort of this idea of, as you become a grown up and you're able to better understand the context that you were raised and maybe the certain insufficiencies of the way that you were raised, just because you're aware of them, it doesn't mean that you've found a cure for it. And just because your parent, your mother, your father was doing it in that way, you understand it, but you're going to manifest that in a completely different way, and you'll never really be able to come to terms with it. And there's something really interesting to unpack there. I just think it's a really exhausting process to get to that point. And I think if you did not, if you weren't able to find the first bit funny, I think you're really in trouble for the rest of the film. And if you don't, because the bits that I found funny are trying to catch up with me 2 hours and 45 minutes later. And that didn't work for me.
Okay.
I do think you should see it in cinema if you're going to see it. I think if you miss 20 seconds of this film, you're going to be completely lost and you'll never be able to catch up. It's of those. It's beautiful to take in. It's very exhausting. But if you are going to see it, I urge you to see it in cinema.
It's very interesting, that idea of just bring it back, just take two things out. It reminds me of a friend of mine. She said that her mother always said to her, when you get ready, you know, dress up, you know, put some jewelry on, and then always take one piece of jewelry off. Mm. And I'm like, you always feel like saying this to Ari. This is great, Ari. Now take one thing out. Take one thing out to trim it down. Also, I was talking to my brother recently. We were talking about this idea of, have you heard about like the three different types of fun?
Oh, I know two. Go on.
Well, there's the fun you have during the moment and then mm-hmm. and then that you don't enjoy afterwards.
Right.
There's the fun that you have not during the moment but have afterwards. And then there is the other kind of fun, which is fun during the moment and fun afterwards.
Right, okay.
Right? It sounds like you're having not much fun during it but kind of actually getting more out of it afterwards to a point.
Yeah, but moments I had so much fun. Over that amount of time, you really do. Your brain goes through a process of elation,
yeah.
the crash, rediscovering,
yeah.
getting tired again. So yeah. like you really ebb and flow and you have to then process it to really try and understand it. And that's where I think I've actually, if you'd asked me when I come out, I've been like, it's rough. But like more I think about the ideas, I think actually it's done something really clever.
Okay. Have you seen Bo is Afraid, yeah. listeners? If you have, email in and let us know. Do you disagree with James? Do you think it's 3 hours of complete nonsense? Do you think Ari Aster's other work was much better? Or do you think, I agree with you, James, there's a lot going on in there that I really enjoy. It made me want to call my mum.
Will you? It's not. Do not see this with your mum. Do not ask your mum what she thought. Yeah. I cannot stress that enough. Do you think you'll go and see it?
I will give it the good college try. Mm. So I would like to, obviously. I mean, for the reasons you said, very distinct filmmaker,
yeah.
with not many films under his belt. Well, you know, it's still in terms of freshness. I'd like to, and since you said I have to see it at the cinema,
that sounds really awful because that's if it's a 3-hour film.
But I did say
over 4 hours of your time to go and
exactly.
Do it.
I did say I would take my mum to see Guardians 3.
Oh, so there you go.
I will for my mum because she loves Guardians, but she's. She's like,
no, do not see the Birds of Prey.
Well, yeah.
Your mother cannot tell you.
Just
that.
Shuffle it. Just this yeah. Russian roulette.
If you do, you'll just be awkward, like in the car on the way home. Like, so what do you think?
So that's my dilemma.
My mum loves films and we like to go and see films together. And I would have been able to sell her on a 3-hour Ari Aster film, but I'm so glad she was not.
This wasn't the one where she was like, oh, just take me anywhere. I'll see anything.
It's icky. You know, like Freudian ickiness.
Yeah.
And like after that amount of time, I'm just like, please, maybe don't. Maybe like, it's like your friend who like doesn't have a filter.
Oh God.
And it's so personal. And it's
I'm talking to him.
And it's, and it's being put out on the most public forum. Yeah. And I just think, Ari, you didn't have to for this long.
Yeah.
And therefore it comes across as wildly overindulgent. If someone said, how could you like any of that? It was what an overindulgent, sticky mess. And I kind of disagree. I think there's a lot about it, which is really smart and really slick. I would never rewatch it apart from the first 50 minutes,
right.
which I thought was brilliant. I wish it could have gone on longer, but I understand why it didn't.
Sure. The film is Beau is Afraid. It's out now. Let us know your thoughts at hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. Let's read some emails now. We love reading our listeners' emails, and we have one straight away about Guardians 3. We did do a lot of Guardians 3 correspondence last week.
We did.
But we've got some more. And this one is from Bennett. Bennett says, hi, guys. I recently found your podcast on Instagram.
Nice.
And then I added you pretty immediately to my rotation of podcasts that I listen to every week.
Love to hear it.
Bennett. You guys are great. And after hearing you read emails on your show, I wanted to reach out about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 because that movie has, in medical terms, completely fucked me up.
Whoa.
Oh, I'm intrigued. Also, at this
not
juncture-
a medical term, but I understand.
Yes, yeah. at this juncture, I just like
he's
to say,
not a doctor.
Bennett, you have very, very cleanly formatted your email. You have italicized the film titles, which is so
yourself.
The next step would be to put the film's year in the brackets afterwards, like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 in brackets 2023.
I'm surprised there aren't appendices for further reading.
Fantastic. So Bennett goes on to say, question, did this movie make you hate Phase 4 MCU movies more?
Mm.
About 10 minutes in, I was shocked, not by the level of filmmaking James Gunn had brought to his film, but by the absence of quality filmmaking in Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, Thor, Love and Thunder, which were both giving, what if we let ChatGPT make a Marvel movie energy?
It really does, doesn't it?
Totally. We show ChatGPT Thor Ragnarok and it wrote a Thor sequel. It's Thor Love and Thunder.
Like just picking up from our conversation last week, Yeah, it does remind you it's not weariness of comic book films. It's the quality of the movies.
Totally.
It's the treatment of the story, the treatment of the characters, the way in which they're being presented to us on screen, respect for our attention, yeah. and for the fact that it didn't seem to reward the people that had been paying attention for every single yeah. film, nor service the people who are just jumping in for that film.
It doesn't take its audience for granted. It recognizes that each film is an opportunity to win and lose your audience, like a football match.
And I praise Guardians 3 for doing a very good job of honoring all the plot baggage that all of these characters yeah. have and finding a way to like bring it to a full stop, have consequence, and then like watching Doctor Strange too, you're like, that doesn't make sense to that yeah, character.
Completely inconsequential.
I don't really, how is this moment that Doctor Strange has been on make sense for anything or something that I should really care about?
Bennett goes on to say, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is my favorite MCU film, nice, if not game. A close second to the OG Iron Man. Nice. I love that it went to a darker, vulnerable place. It speaks to James Gunn's talent that he made the most human MCU film, despite the fact that the protagonist is a talking raccoon.
Yeah.
I really love and respect that Gunn made Rocket the protagonist, not Quill, in this film. Yeah, I agree. Bennett says, I cried, or more accurately, I sobbed.
Protagonist.
I see your point because
he's most. I know what you mean.
You know what he is. He's not. It's one of those things where you're like, he's not the main character, but he is the protagonist.
Yes, that's true. Technically,
because dramatically, he propels the motion of the drama.
That's
the film.
True.
I cried, or more accurately, I sobbed at least twice while watching. Yeah. It's pretty impressive that we all
Toofs.
Saw. It's pretty impressive that we all saw 99% of the plot coming and it still delivered it to us in such an emotionally effective way.
That is true. That's a skill, actually, if you can communicate what's going to happen, but you're still up for it.
I think that's something that gets lost in film discourse these days. You can tell a predictable story so long as you don't show it predictably. Absolutely. Mm. And I don't think this film does that. Also, any movie that makes me cry is a good movie. Do with that what you will. No, I agree. It's that thing of like, a lot of movies are, you kind of like, you go see Mission Impossible film, you know the beats you're going to get. You know how it's kind of going to resolve itself, but it's the way it reveals itself and tells itself. It's the execution that does it in a way that feels like you're not being told the same old story.
It's like a film is almost like giving you pieces of the puzzle and you're sort of, it feels good to sort of fit it yourself.
Exactly.
At the end, it satirizes. Yes, that piece fits there. I see what you're doing. Blah, blah, blah. Bo's Afraid isn't like that.
Anyway, I got so off track here. The film is not without its flaws that you've pointed out. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong for seeing these flaws. That's not how consuming art is supposed to work. I'd just like to share the thoughts that I had in case you find them compelling. I spent the first half of the movie thinking Adam Warlock was nothing more than an add-on who was distracting us from a much more interesting story. I do see that point. However, the more screen time Will Poulter had, the more I began to connect the dots between Adam Warlock and the late Richard Kiel's Jaws from the James Bond films, The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker. Okay, let's see where this is going. Jaws with the metal teeth, right?
Yeah.
Jaws was an extremely overwhelming physical henchman, secondary antagonist in The Spy Who Loved Me, before becoming a bit campier and romantic in Moonraker. I think Adam Warlock fills a very similar role in this film. He's an 80s era sci-fi henchman, secondary antagonist with 2020s flair. That is a really good observation. I really like that. Yeah. I also agree at first with the note that the movie does drag a bit for me. Okay, spoilers ahead.
Same. Spoilers for Guardians 3. If you haven't seen Guardians 3, please skip forward two minutes.
For me, spoilers, blah, 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 blah. The drag began when Matt Drax took Mantis to go rescue Quill, Groot and Nebula, leaving Rocket and Gamora behind. No, I like that bit. That's in the third act with the things coming out of the planet, right?
He doesn't like it. He's saying that's when it felt like a drag. Oh,
yeah. That, for me, that's when it kind of kicked into gear. Right. It felt reductive and frustrating because it made the outcome that much more predictable. But without that choice from Drax, we never would have seen the scene with him cheering the children up. Yeah, which is great.
Yeah,
and Nebula wouldn't truly have seen Drax the dad. Yeah. Looking back on Drax's early choice to go try and save his friends, it was annoying, but it ended up serving the character beautifully. Exactly. Characters can do frustrating things, even though it's like, you know, because people do make mistakes. People do act irrationally. I know Dave Bautista said that there wasn't much more to get out of Drax's character, and after this movie and his performance, I totally believe him. He wasn't sure that much. I think in the sense that like they did get more out of Drax in this film, but they got enough. You know, I felt like they concluded him. They got the final amount.
There's plenty of it, and I never got tired.
Yeah, exactly. All that said, thank you for reading this obnoxiously long email. It's not obnoxious.
Okay. It's fine.
I hope you're both doing well. I love your show, and I hope I didn't come across.
A croff.
I hope I didn't come off like a complete dork.
Not at all. We're
this
all
is
little
a safe
film
space.
Dorks.
What is a bunch of nerds here?
And hey, guys, just want to say Bennett has set the bar for email formatting. Oh. So for all of you out there, typing away, your punctuation.
Because also,
give us moments to breathe. Remember, we're reading this aloud. Yeah. Yes. Giving us throwing some dashes.
Dictate this.
New lines, ellipsis even. Tell us how to read it.
And Bennett, you sign off with all the best, Bennett, I love. And then your signature is so neat. It is your name and your contact details in a slightly a gray typeface, yes. A sort of faded typeface, which is useful but unintrusive to the rest of the email. I love it. James, what's next?
Bennett, you can write in again. Next one is from Warren, who says, hello, James and George.
Hello.
Firstly, I wanted to congratulate you on cracking the podcast formula of being such engaging conversationalists that the subject at hand does not matter.
Could we take that to like whoever gives podcasters loads of money? And we yes. can say, it's look, I don't know if you know this, formula. We've cracked it and Warren has told us so. So could you just give us all the money to do podcasting?
You're very kind.
Forever?
I would love to say we've cracked the formula.
Yeah.
I'd love to be playing in Times Square and live streamed on Twitch and hosting the Oscars.
Yes.
Give us
all
time.
At once.
Yes, all at once. All the podcasts I listen to are based on vague interests of mine, but it is the enjoyment from the hosts interacting and often going off on unrelated tangents that keeps me coming back.
Hey, I'm still using my enamel teapot.
Yes, we do try. I've wanted to email you since I discovered you by searching for film podcasts on Instagram. Proud to say it wasn't TikTok, but wanted to wait until I'd finished the back catalogue to make sure I didn't repeat anyone's question. That is really good.
Another full, completist.
And another nod, if you write in a question that we've not heard before, obviously more likely to have it read out. So please try and think of if you've asked it. And I love this SEO we got going on the Instagram. You type in film podcast, we come up.
Yes.
Smashing it. My question to you came to me whilst watching Succession based on your recommendation. It got me thinking about how different people will watch a TV show over time. I personally will normally watch a season or two of a show before I find myself start to enjoy it less and less. I will then usually take a break from that show for a couple of months or sometimes even longer. Breaking Bad took me 3 years to get through. Even though I loved every episode, I wanted to make sure it remained special each time I turned it on. I kind of know what you mean.
And also, but that makes sense. I mean, don't forget it was aired and broadcast
over years
as well. So you're kind of following that kind of pattern. 100%,
meant to digest. And yeah. I was wondering if you two have had any of these specific tendencies when sitting down to watch a show that's been on your list for a while. Other examples are that my dad will only watch a TV show once he knows there is a final season.
That's
really good. That's really smart. I mean, like, you can be really left out of the conversation, but a dad's not really like...
He's sitting there being like, I'll watch Game of Thrones when it finishes.
He's just about to start and they do House of the Dragon. He's like, no.
Yeah.
No, I want the whole thing. And my friend and I live with will watch half a season of a show in one night, finishing all series within a couple of weeks, making it very difficult to watch shows with him. Yeah. Love the podcast and keep up the great work, Warren. P.S. Bring back the food for the 100th episode. just sort of watching habits, George, for TV, is it all depending?
I mean, I don't have any like hard or fast rules, but like usually what I do is that I will let a series start for a few weeks. I actually like weekly episodes because it's much more manageable. We've talked about it, you know, you enjoy the conversation. Yeah. The year of me binging something is over.
Want to cover films, it's very daunting. It's like watch 9 hours of TV for your thing next week and enjoy it.
But let's say we're doing something like Succession, 10 episode series. Bad example, because Succession I've been watching weekly to avoid spoilers. But let's say someone gives me a 10 episode series. Yeah. What I'll usually do, and if I'm on the fence, I'm like, well, I'll let that show start, like I did with House of the Dragon.
Yeah.
I'm unsure. I'll let that show start, see what the reviews are like, see what the discussion is like. And then if you tell me or someone else tells me, oh, I think that's actually quite good, or I get a good sense for it, then I can catch up quite readily in a week or two. And then I'm invested and I'm there for the thing. So that's probably the only sort of pattern I have.
I've enjoyed doing both. There's times I've watched shows weekly as it comes out and I've really enjoyed that discussion. And then I think I rewatched all of Game of Thrones before the last season and had such a good time watching it that way. Because it's such a, you spend so much time your first time watching Game of Thrones trying to figure out how the world works and the houses and the rules and the names for everything. And then when you already know that, you get to rediscover it and binge it.
I think the more I think about binging, you're talking about rewatching the show, the more I think about binging, you're just like, that cannot be the best way to watch TV shows anymore. It was a marketing industrial ploy by the likes of Netflix that really hooked you in.
I think the DVD box set would have been when it started, I think.
Well, yeah, like, but that would have been after release, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so you're right. Yes,
so it's true. Primary, like...
But people would be watching it for the first time. Like, oh, I bought the box set of 24, I've never seen it, I'm going to binge it.
Yeah,
people
true, but it's more like, this is the latest, hottest show and you can watch it instantly, straight away. And I think we've just changed that now. It's back.
We've talked about before, like, how that will...
Good question, Warren. That's really great. This next email is from Naomi.
Friend of the show.
Who says... You said that like a dog. Like hearing
squirrel.
Squirrel outside, yeah. Naomi says, hello, guys. I recently watched the movie Chevalier in cinema. Now, okay, look, I saw this email come in and I had to Google the movie Chevalier. It's not the 2015 one about the guys on the boat. It's the new one, which just to context, because Naomi doesn't explain this in her email. Chevalier is a 2022 drama music film that I don't think is... Oh, it's coming out in a few weeks here. Naomi, did you email in about that Operation Fortune film as well? Because you seem to be seeing from us before we are.
Yeah, what?
We're going to have to move
what
to...
moment in time are you,
wherever
Naomi?
You're based again. So it's about the illegitimate son of an African slave and a French plantation owner who rises to improbable heights in French society as a celebrated violinist, composer, and fencer, complete with a love affair and falling out with Marie Antoinette. Bloody hell, there's got a lot going on that. Anyway, Naomi says, I saw that and I had to write to you immediately because this movie is an absolute... This movie is about classical music and I usually don't like that type of music, but I enjoyed this movie so much. She's written with about a 10 O's. The story was really good and interesting. There was some unexpected turn of events and I was impressed by the costumes, the music, just everything. So I really recommend it to you guys. Have a nice day.
I like it when our listeners from certain regions or the future can recommend us stuff and go, oh, this is good. Go watch it on our list. Because then I get awareness of it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, somebody said.
Thanks, Naomi. I appreciate the heads up. We look forward to that coming out in the UK on the 9th of June.
This next one's from William. And I knew this was going to happen.
Yes.
I knew this was going to happen. We make a lot of little passing, a lot of films come up.
Yep.
We make a lot of fleeting little statements.
I think you're a fan of the flippin' hot take.
A little
flippin'
hot take. I'll throw someone under the bus. William writes in and says, greeting chaps. I feel the need to chip in on John from Liverpool's behalf and defend his controversial opinion that Monsters University is in fact superior to its predecessor, Monsters, Inc. Okay, I'm going to hear you out.
Yeah,
I'm definitely going to hear you out.
I thought it was Joe from Liverpool because I thought we've got two Joe from Liverpool.
Oh, he's written John. But yeah.
Either way, but go on.
Shout out to the Liverpool leaders out there. Monsters University is better than its predecessor? I'm not so sure. I'm going to hear you out.
Here we go.
Right. Better to its predecessor, Monsters, Inc., and stand up to the unacceptable dismissal of this animated gem as a, quote, really
gem.
Disappointing, unneeded prequel. I should make it clear that I love Monsters, Inc., and I, too, would love to see a sequel, but this is not valid criticism in the existence of Monsters University. Monsters University is a fantastic movie in its own right, a much better film than it has been given credit for, and, I agree with John, better than Monsters, Inc. The themes of friendship, toxic masculinity, and finding purpose, which are explored throughout the movie, are perfect for the stage of life Mike and Sully are at. Not yet fully formed adult monsters and still figuring out who they are and their place in the world. I'm not laughing at your email. I'm laughing at
the idea,
the concept. Yeah. The scene in the human world where Sully confides in Mike about his struggles with anxiety and how he presents his confident and how he presents as confident while secretly being terrified of showcasing his true emotions to the world is a particularly powerful portrayal of how men still struggle to speak freely about their emotions. But the following moments where Sully confesses that the reason he was never told Mike this before is because they weren't friends before is an emotional gut punch packing similar heft to the When She Loved Me montage from Toy Story 2.
Don't.
It's a beautiful moment that encapsulates what the film has been building towards on a thematic and emotional level, with Sully finally finding the confidence he needs to speak truthfully about his emotions due to the power of friendship. Of course, this is all disguised as a hilarious college movie set in Monstropolis with plenty of fun Monsters, Inc. callbacks and references, which, by the way, is a fun enough movie in its own right. But I may suggest a proper rewatch to fully appreciate the depth and brilliance of this underappreciated classic. P.S. Love the show. Look forward to listening every week whilst getting my steps in. The games are my favourite part, a fun, unique feature that sets you apart from other film podcasts out there. And the reason I started listening in the first place when I discovered you guys on TikTok. Yeah. I always pause the podcast and try to figure out the answer myself first. Interesting.
Yes.
Albeit definitely cheating and giving myself a few extra minutes every time so I don't end up screaming in my local park. Will from Manchester. Will,
great, yeah. Good defense there of that film.
So many things
not
I missed.
Not seen it, so.
You haven't seen Monsters
University? No, I haven't seen it, so I couldn't comment at all on that. But I appreciate the very thought-out defense.
Will, I completely believe you.
When he said getting his steps in, my thought was, my boo-scootin' baby is driving me crazy, my confessions, you know?
It's like aerobics, just headband, Jamie Lee Curtis.
You're talking about the film with John Travolta, but yours are Jane Fonda, the step workout.
Oh, yeah,
Jane Fonda's famous workout. Okay, next up we have an email from Kane who says, accents. I started watching your podcast recently.
This is Hi Both Too.
Did I not say that?
No, you just said accents.
Sorry, the subject heading is accents. Yeah. Kane then says, Hi Both.
Thank you.
I started watching your podcast recently and I absolutely love it. And yes. I've recommended it to all my movie watching friends. Yes, thank you so much, Kane.
Yes.
The list of movies that I need, I'd love if we could see that on a graph. Like this is the day that Kane recommended it to his friends.
And I want to see like a viral contagion type little explosion on the map.
It's like the opening theme tune for the Last of Us.
Yes, yeah.
The list of movies that I need to watch is growing after every episode I watch. One of the big things that I notice in movies that I need, that I feel not a lot of people watch. It's been a long day. One of the big things that I notice in movies that I feel not a lot of people I watch movies with care or even notice is accents. We did have that email from Steve from Florida recently about accents. Mm. For me, they can make or break a movie and I fixate on it throughout the movie and sometimes it ruins the movie for myself.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I love looking up a movie and realizing the main actor / actress is not native to the accent that they are doing.
Mm.
Notable mentions include Gillian Anderson, Sex Education, who I thought was English for years until I looked her up on Wikipedia. But isn't she English-American? I like American English. I think she's got one foot over here. I will just clarify that. But I agree. She's, you know, she can really do anything, can't she? She is an American British actress. She's got an OBE, that's probably why she can do an accent quite well. But good accent.
Still.
Also, Renee Zellweger in Bridget Jones and Daniel Craig's amazing.
Yes, Renee Zellweger in Bridget Jones.
Yes, of course, she's very good in that. And then, hang on, Daniel Craig's amazing deep South accent that I didn't know he was capable of. Daniel Craig's deep South accent in Knives Out is not
the stupidest idea.
It's cartoonish. It's not. I don't think it's accurate. It's
he does something where he out of his cheeks.
Pah, this is hooey. So it's good in the sense he commits to it, but sure.
And he does the, it's where would we be for that?
On the flip side to that, some actors / actresses' attempts of accents that are notably awful are Bill Nye's American accent in Total Recall. My God, someone made Bill Nye do an American accent. Dreadful movie anyway.
Mm.
And weirdly, Martin Freeman's accent in Black Panther.
Yeah, it feels a bit forced. Similar to the Doctor, Benedict Cumberbatch's Doctor Strange. It's a little bit, Martin Freeman just is English. You know what I mean?
But then he says,
Incredible actor.
But it's weird because his Minnesota accent in the Fargo series was very good. I agree. He was very good in that. He really, really pulled that off really well. And Dame Judi Dench's Northern Irish accent in Belfast. Yeah, but the thing is, no one's going to say, Judy, do you mind doing another take?
No, Judy does what Judy does. And it's fantastic.
Kane's question is this. Do you have any movie recommendations of actors, actresses doing an amazing accent so good you thought it was theirs, or actors and actresses who are doing a horrible accent? So we did have this email recently. Oh, and Kane says, sorry for the long-winded email. Many thanks, Kane. We did have this email recently and we did talk about it. Again, I said Lake Bell and Man Up, great accent. Mm. So we did do that question quite recently and I would check back, I think it's only 2 weeks ago for the email from Steve from Florida about that. You can see our answers in that. Off the top of my head, it was like Lake Bell and Man Up, I really appreciate it. Mm. And we also said Keanu Reeves in Dracula is the worst. Thank you.
Just go YouTube clips. I doubt many people have seen that, but go YouTube Keanu Reeves in Bram Stoker's Dracula, just for a laugh. Put it on a party. You have a good time. This next one is from Taha, the Pakistani correspondent, who's a friend of the show.
The snacker.
Yes, Snackgate.
Yeah, Snackgate.
Hello, James and George. Loving the pod as always. I just heard your review on Polite Society and wanted to share my thoughts on the film. Guys, Polite Society review is up. Please go and check it out.
Six.
Firstly, as a Pakistani, I absolutely loved the humour and aesthetic of the film. The film felt peppered with jokes specifically for South Asian audiences, and on multiple occasions, I found myself laughing harder than most people in the cinema. The aesthetic of the film also lovingly harkened back to Pakistani and Indian films of the 50s and 60s.
Yes.
With its font choices, fight choreography, it generally felt like a film that was made by and for South Asian audiences.
Yes.
However, as you guys mentioned, it was the third act genre switch that made me feel unsure about the films I left the cinema. Similar to you guys, I also thought about it in comparison to Everything Everywhere All at Once, questioning why I liked that film over Polite Society. Aside from Everything Everywhere being an overall better made film, one reason is that it doesn't trick you with its sci-fi elements, and by introducing them early, is better able to integrate them into its narrative and themes. While for Polite Society, having these elements in the third act changes the film's priority from the characters
resistance to the sci-fi elements. Secondly, I also thought that as a Pakistani, there was a part of me that held certain expectations from the film that I didn't have with Everything Everywhere. I was expecting the film to have a strong socio-political message or stance, which in hindsight seems unfair to expect from it. It was simply taking a stereotype and playing it as a hyperbolic joke. But it did make me consider how I view films more closely tied to my identity, brackets queer and Pakistani, in comparison to the ones outside it, brackets the majority of Western cinema. Anyway, keep up the great work. I also wanted to shout out the theme song for your podcast, as I enjoy listening to it even after you guys have stopped talking.
I'll let it run for longer then.
A couple of people have said that actually before, like, you know, we did something, you know, the other day about being at Spotify and, you know, dropping an album or something like that. And someone was like, yeah, it'd be an hour long album of the music. Yeah. Dun,
dun. P.S. While kitchenettes and pulpets are good names, I do prefer sirens much more, as it feels more of an inside joke for fans of the podcast and not something you immediately understand from an outsider perspective.
That's good.
The official Pakistani student of the podcast, Taha. I am warming more towards sirens.
I think that's it. Solves it.
Sirens?
Instead
like
of having
the
jets,
mermaids that drown pirates?
Instead of having the jets and the sharks like we have with pulpets and kitchenettes. Sirens. Let's come together and let's be sirens, because we all know it's the sirens are on our end. Are you a siren? Yeah, I'm a siren. I'm a proper siren.
And if you ever see us, I want you to just go.
Don't do that. But you could say if you see it, if you see us and you want to say something cool and you want to say something that's like an in-joke, just come up to us and just go, the sirens are on our end.
And I'll know that you're not just someone who watches us on
exactly. Reels.
I'll know you listen to the show.
That's like a true fan.
Siren. A fellow siren.
Say it. Say it to us if you see us.
I'm a siren.
The sirens are on our end. The sirens are on our end. Yes. The sirens are on our end. And I'll say, no. The sirens were on our end.
And then we all just burst out crying. Taha, thank you so much as always for
Okay, next email is from Josh, who says, just wants to say, hey guys, love the tea discussion.
A lot of you love the tea discussion.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad. It's
I was worried
thing.
About it. I was in the edit. I was like, that was 8 minutes of tea.
You know, you talk passionately about anything, it'll go. Love the tea discussion. Please waffle more often. That was just fantastic. I have got to recommend a show called From. Okay. It is possibly one of the best horror mystery shows I have ever seen.
Okay.
Produced by Joe and Anthony Russo. It has Harold Perrineau in it.
They produce a lot.
Okay, I don't know who Harold Perrineau is.
They produce a lot. It was like from producers, Anthony and Joe Russo from Avengers Endgame.
Harold Perrineau. Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, Harold Perrineau. Oh, my God. Yeah, he's in loads. I believe...
Harold Perrineau is in Lost.
And Mercutio in Romeo and Juliet. A plague on both your houses. He doesn't say it like that, but you know, that's the line.
Yeah.
They've made worm's meat of me. From is a show that will hook you in immediately. It's concept heavy with great characters and genuinely scary, but not jump scares, more long lasting. It had the same effect as The Last of Us on me. It is available on Sky. Season 2 has been released in America this month. Kind regards, Josh. Josh, just looking at From now, since 2022, got 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. I've never heard of this. Have you, James?
No. Never heard of it. It's on Sky, which I feel like a lot of Sky originals really come and go.
Because it's kind of locked in, that's why you either are. Yeah. If you're not on Sky, you're not going
to
see it.
And it's like you have to be flicking through to go, oh, look, Rufus, like Dominic, what's the name?
Rufus Sewell, Dominic
Rufus
West.
Sewell, Dominic West is in a new Sky drama.
I see. Okay.
Warren writes in and says, while not exactly remote, subject, hello from the other side.
Right.
Adele. While not exactly remote, isn't Sydney, Australia the opposite side of the globe from you? Hello from there anyway. Cheers, Warren, sent via Kangaroo.
Yeah, we asked a question for guys to let us know if you think you're the most remote listener or the most furthest away. Yes, I guess technically Sydney is the opposite end of the world. But you know what? If you're listening to this in Australia, I want the most remote Australian listener. I want you to be listening to it in like central.
Well, Sydney, I'm not impressed, but like the red desert of Australia is what I'm more interested in. Yeah, I threw out Antarctica. It would be a good one.
Yes, sure.
It
was somebody on a research station.
Some like northern Norway village that is otherwise inaccessible during winter months because it's frozen.
Oh,
like you can only get there by boat.
Like Sisu.
Yes, and like from November to March, you can't get there unless you get some like huskies and you mush there. I want to know.
No one goes there. No it's one the wired lands.
Yes. Yeah. It's very like mistrusting of outsiders.
Thank you. Yes, keep letting us know. But thank you, Warren. I appreciate you getting in.
Calvin writes in with an email titled Justice for George. Right. And he's screenshot his Spotify or Apple TV with the soundtrack of Blade Runner 2049. And he circled
Hans Zimmer, because the other day I said, we played a game and I said, name 10 films with the Hans Zimmer score. You said Blade Runner 2049. I said, no. There you go. I give you a point
Thank you.
Back.
Thank
Here
you.
You are. Thank
Do
you,
Do I get
Calvin.
My massive check now?
You are absolved of your, check. You want reparations. Calvin, thank you for fact-checking us. George, apologies.
Well, guys, that's all we have time for today on the emails. We'll have plenty more to read out next week, but we keep sending them in. We really do appreciate it. And I just love the discussions in there.
It's fantastic.
Great. Keep the brains
recommendations.
Working. I love it. Thank you so much. Okay, James, we've reached that point of the episode, the end of the episode, where it's time to play a game. I've got three rounds of games for you.
Okay.
Three miscellaneous rounds. The first one, I need to get my timer out because it's going to be a 30-second one. Forgive me. Okay.
Forgive me.
Are you ready, Jamesy? Are you prepped? I feel like mentally you're not ready to do a game.
Yeah, I need to snap out of it. Just scream into a pillow and splash my face with ice water. I'll be like Rick Dalton in his trailer, like icing his hungover face. Yeah.
Okay. Here we go.
Okay.
Here's the first game.
Okay.
James, in 30 seconds, can you name 7 bald actors?
Vin Diesel. I'm going to go with... they have to be bald or they play bald characters?
They have to be bald.
Okay. Jason Statham.
Yes.
We have got... oh, the guy from Men in Black. What's his name? Oh, shit. I know who you mean. This is so hard.
Oh,
I can't
5.
Think of any. No.
4. Oh, 3. 2. 1. 2. That's the worst. That is the worst you.
Who's the one from who plays the shop assistant in Men in Black?
The shop assistant in Men in Black?
Hang
on, let me read you some bald actors.
Yeah,
first.
Read me some bald
James,
actors.
You've missed some. I thought you could have got so many more. Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Stanley Tucci.
Yes.
Bruce Willis. Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh,
Patrick
yeah,
Stewart. Good. Ben Kingsley.
I need to think older.
Mark Strong.
Mark Strong.
You know, I could go on. I could go on. Billy
really
Zane.
Odd.
I know.
Billy Zane. Billy Zane is out there rocking. Larry David.
Larry
Jason
David.
Alexander. Like the famous bald actors.
But you got 2. I'm glad that stumped you. That really got you.
Yeah, it's really good. I like that.
Okay. These next 2 rounds were first done to me in a pub quiz.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going
to
give me
stuff. No. First done to me in a pub quiz at the end of my university degree.
Okay.
And I've thought about them for many years. I've always thought, that's quite a good question. Mm-hmm. And I've converted it into our own format.
Okay.
So, James, next round. James, in 30 seconds, can you name 7 Justin Timberlake movies? Go.
In Time, Friends with Benefits, to The Social Network, Sing.
No.
Trolls.
Yes.
Trolls 2.
Yes.
And I need to think back earlier.
How do you know that?
He did the song. I think that's all I got.
5 seconds.
And no,
time. There we go. Okay. Well done. You got 5 out of 7 there. Okay. I'm very impressed with you with Trolls. I think
there are 7.
He's done more than 7 films, but I just thought you're not going to be able to name more than 7 films. So you did the obvious ones, In Time, Friends with Benefits, and The Social Network, because those all came out within like a year of each other.
This one, he was really going for it with the acting, wasn't he?
But you could also have had Bad Teacher. Runner, that forgettable film with Ben Affleck and Gemma Arterton.
Okay.
Another forgettable film, Trouble with the Curve, a Clint Eastwood film about baseball.
There you go.
And what else we got? Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yes,
that's another big
there.
One. Yeah.
Yes.
And then it says here, now, well, you got The Love Guru, apparently, Wonder Wheel. And it says here, Shrek the Third and Shrek Forever After. But I'm not sure if that is actually a soundtrack or not. Yogi Bear, the movie.
I can't say I've seen it.
No, but yeah. That's
more power to you, Justin Timberlake. Keep them coming.
That is 5 out of 7 there, James. Well done.
I'll take that. I'll take that as a solid entry for the...
I hope...
So the pub quiz question was, you got to get 7...
It was just like name as Justin many Justin Timberlake movies as you can.
As you can, yeah.
And similarly, this next question is follows on from a similar vein.
Okay.
Okay, last game, James.
Mm-hmm.
In 30 seconds, can you name 7 Madonna movies?
Okay, Die Another Day.
Yes.
Did she appear in her own one, WE, that she directed?
No. But well remembered. I might give you a half point for remembering that she directed that.
Madonna. I don't think I... God, it sounds so familiar. What else is Madonna in?
5.
I don't think I got 4. No, go on.
3. Time.
Okay, so
that is a tougher one. That I think I should have given you 5, but the answers are Evita, huge one. You did Die Another Day, Swept Away, Vision Quest, Desperately Seeking Susan, and
that's tough.
And
that's a pub quiz you stew over it for over the course of hours.
Dick Tracy.
These are ones that you leave on the table, so, and you're meant to as they come to you. You go, oh, Dick Tracy.
So there are a couple of forgotten ones, like Shanghai Surprise and Swept Away and Vision Quest. I didn't expect you to get, but things like Desperately Seeking Susan, Dick Tracy, Evita, A League of Their Own as well, the baseball one. Okay. So I would have used those, but
that's tough.
That is a tough one. It says here Agent Cody Banks, but she's not in that.
This must be a song.
There must be a song. Yeah, that doesn't count. I don't believe that she was in Cheaper by the Dozen 2 or Agent Cody Banks 2, Destination London. God, do you remember those?
Yeah, with the Malcolm in the Middle guy.
Yeah, Frankie Muniz. Yeah.
I think I've only seen Agent Cody Banks 1.
I think that's fine.
I think that's okay.
I think that's got Ian McShane in it, and I think I saw that at the cinema. That came out 2003. No,
Which is the one that's not Agent Cody Banks? We've just got Paul Giamatti in it.
That is Liar Liar with Frankie Muniz and Amanda Bynes.
But not that Liar.
No, it's not. Sorry, it's not called Liar Liar. I think it's called Big Fat Liar.
Big Fat Liar, which is Paul Giamatti, I guess.
Yes, that's right. And Amanda Bynes. And that is a
Disney Channel original.
Sean Levy movie.
Or a Nickelodeon film.
And I remember because it has that picture of Paul Giamatti being blue.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it, guys. Those are the games for today. A miscellaneous bunch. But Madonna, you know, the thing is, about...
A creative singer, sort of Lady Gaga-esque, turning up in films.
The two
she?
Things to say is that, I mean, I haven't seen Evita in a very long time, but there was a lot of people were... There was a bit of controversy about when she got the role because it was like, I think Patti LuPone had played the role on Broadway for years and then Madonna came in and got it. But the thing is, I think Madonna is actually quite good in the film.
Did she do a Guy Ritchie film? Because they were married at one
point.
Yes,
Swept Away, which is the non-Guy Ritchie. It's like, it's not gangsters or anything. I've never seen it. It's just going to be a disaster.
Right, okay.
And in Desperately Seeking Susan, the weird thing is, I mean, which is just such an odd sort of weird film anyway. It's not that good from the 80s. The weird thing in that movie is that Madonna is okay, but there's a bit where the character Susan, played by Madonna, goes to a nightclub and dances with someone to a Madonna song. So they're playing into the groove in the club. And my brain's going, but hang on, but that's Madonna, but it's not Madonna, but we're listening to Madonna. Does this person who's not Madonna but played by Madonna know that that's Madonna?
The only thing you're allowed to do is like in Men in Black, when Will Smith is the star, you can play in the credits a Will Smith song. That's okay.
Are you counting a Will Smith song that isn't the Men in Black theme tune?
He'd made the tune.
Well, that's different. Yeah, because for the film.
Yes.
Yeah. But this wasn't Madonna going desperately seeking.
No, not allowed.
Yeah, not allowed.
It was immersion breaking.
Markdown. Men in Black theme tune though. Great track. Great theme tune.
Men in Black,
based off of Patrice Rushen's song "Forget Me Nots." Another great track. Great bass line. Anyway, those are the games for this week, and we have now reached the end of the episode for Pulp Kitchen.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Don't forget, we post new episodes of this show every single Wednesday.
Continue to please follow us on Instagram and TikTok, because we go to like interesting things and we post interesting events and stuff. It's great to be stay in touch, but also it's a really great way of supporting us. Share clips, like clips. We really appreciate it. And just stay tuned for all kind of news we've got coming out.
Guys, please, I love the people that are leaving reviews on all of the apps that you listen to us on. That really helps us grow the show. People are starting to discover the show and they're going to look at the reviews. So if you're listening on Apple, please give us a review if you've got time and write something nice. If you're listening on Spotify, give us a rating, a good 1 out of 10. That would be so good. And then tell someone. I think I read this week it's like 35-40% of people find out about new podcasts through word of mouth.
So you guys are the mouths.
Spread
the
virally,
words
virally, like a fungus.
Yes.
Infect.
Thank you so much.
Go out
petri
dish.
One of your first listeners to this episode. If you're a new listener,
please give us a like.
Thank you for getting to the end. We really appreciate it. We'd love you to join us next week. Thank you.
See you next week, guys.
Bye.